Hey, yo, what's up, Square Pimp Brigade? On this episode, we have Brett Raybould.
Raybould.
He's back again. I love this dude. He talks about his play. Is it okay to talk to an ex? How to pick up a stripper? And he talks about his new play called Race the Movie, the Play. Check that out at racethemovie.theplay.com. Also, don't forget the Patreon. Sign up for the Patreon.
Yeah,
consultations,
right.
DanteNero.com. God, Harry, I'm sorry.
I was going to say the Patreon is where we do our bonus content, and for a small fee a month, it helps support the show and keep the show going. And we do bonus content like this week's episode. We continue our conversation with Brett Raybould. As we discuss why perspectives in life matters, small tips on speaking with women, and also some Patrice O'Neill and Bill Burr stories. So that's all exclusively over at patreon.com/manschool202.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man.
Better man. Better man.
Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
Yo, what's up, y'all? GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The Sexual Revolution being podcasted. And I am excited. We got a special guest this time. Now, I know I've said that 500 times before, but this time I mean it. First and foremost, I got my partner in crime. What's going on, Harry? What's going on?
Hey, buddy. What's going on? I'm doing great. Life is good. I can't complain. I do complain, but nobody cares. It's fine.
Nobody's listening.
It's not worth complaining about, but that doesn't stop me from complaining.
You ready to rock and roll?
Absolutely, always.
This is a friend of the show. He's been on the show before. He's got some shit that he wanted to promote out, and always like talking to him and always like watching to see where his Bitcoin is going.
He's always doing something strange and different in comedy.
Something different.
And so he's got another thing for us today.
He's got a good life. Got a good life. Hashtag why not, right?
That's right. That's right.
Give it up for Brett, y'all. Give it up for Brett.
Brett Raybould, everybody. Brett Raybould.
How you doing, bro?
It's great to be here. I'm ready to get my balls back, yo.
How's that been working? We gave you a little advice last time we spoke. How's that work?
You know what? It's been good. I mean, you know, I like to think I'm with the new lady. You know, I had a breakup, but it was like a chill breakup. Mm-hmm. This is my third adult relationship. And that breakup was like chill and relaxed. Mm-hmm. And the one before it was like messy and awful. And then now in the new relationship, 3-4 months in, it's going well. I got my balls, I hope, at least.
We always have them. The problem is keeping them. That's the problem, you know?
Yeah.
It's just through, you know, I used to always say that there's no vacations in manhood. You don't get a vacation on that. You gotta show up every day. And if you don't, you will lose your balls.
I think you gotta communicate what you need, and you know, I think you got to be with a person who there are expectations for. It can be sometimes different as a comic in a relationship too, just in terms of the work hours and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because we aren't as, you know, prototypically 9-to-5. Our hours are more sporadic.
But to be honest, I know plenty of 9-to-5 guys who are home and their woman is still lonely. Even though they're home, you know. So what I mean, I think what has to happen is I think what we're talking about really is a quality time as opposed to just time in general. And I think the one thing about a comic has legitimate excuses for not that you need a legitimate excuse. I mean, the reality is if you're with somebody and you don't want to be with them and you don't want to spend time with them, then you know, you are, what are you doing? You know what I mean? I mean, why even do that?
Right. That's the idea of quality time is definitely one that my lady has helped impress upon me just in terms of like sitting and watching something at the end of the day doesn't really count as us being together. That's us like downtiming it is different from like, oh, we're actually you know, engaging. Doing something interesting, well, or mean, if it's just going to the park. It doesn't have to be like a
but it all depends on, and I think it's reasonable to think about certain things in terms of what somebody wants or what they don't want. It doesn't have to be. I mean, it could be sitting and watching something if that's what she's into. I mean, I think that we have a standard of what we think it should look like, and that really doesn't matter. The bottom line is, you know, again, as I've said this at least 100 times, is it, relationships are really easy. What are your non-negotiables, and then never negotiate them. And if our non-negotiables don't match up, that's what, I don't have to be mad at you.
Right.
We just don't match up, you know. I think, and just recognize and being honest about what you're looking for, because if you're not getting what you want anyway, what are you doing? Like, now, really?
Sorry to cut you off.
No, I was, go ahead.
No, totally. I was going to ask you, I mean, you obviously, I think you talk with a lot of guys who are either maybe wanting to get in a relationship or are in one.
Yeah.
Do you find that people just stay in things where they're not
absolutely.
Having a good time just because the Band-Aid pull off is sometimes all
I don't know if you heard of my good friend, Johnny Depp.
Your friend of the show, couldn't get him to go.
I mean, he doesn't listen nearly enough as he should. But I mean, I had a client the other day, Will Smith. I don't know if you heard it. He's an actor. He does some small films here and there. And, and so, you know, I mean, but I think that's really a testimony to how far up it goes.
Totally. That type of stuff is fascinating to go like, I heard Will Smith in a actors roundtable, you know, when they do those things, right? And he said such an unhealthy perspective. He was telling a story about how when he was like 16, he got cheated on, and his takeaways, he said on the round table, he goes, at that moment, I told myself I was going to become the biggest actor in the world so that it would never happen again.
Oh, really? That came out of his mouth.
Dude, I swear that was like a direct quote. And I remember you, like, in retrospect, you're just like, oh, first off, you're like, that's not how it works. No. Like, it's not like, clearly, even if you're a man of insane success and stature, yes. That's not how it works. And then obviously it didn't work out that way either in the literal sense. Right. It's just like, oh boy, William.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. Yeah, he
took
thing.
The wrong lesson from that whole situation. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. It's funny because Harry and I talk about this all the time. We talk about like the whole Me Too movement am I thinking Weinstein?
Weinstein is not a pedophile. Everything right. was a well, above you age. Know,
that remains to be seen. But that's
yeah. I'm not.
I mean, he's powerful in Hollywood. There's a 10% chance.
I don't know why you're going to bat for Weinstein. Well, I'm not going to bat. Fuck your problem is you.
I'm trying to get cast in the Weinstein comeback movie.
I think he's going to start producing Small Feet Independence. Very independent.
He's got the money.
Very small. Very
Epstein small. Is you're thinking of?
Which one? No, Epstein. Weinstein. Weinstein is the one I was thinking of.
Okay. Epstein was like trafficked young under.
Yeah, right. So my point is what Harry and I used to say until Harry started defending.
Oh, Jesus. Let's not get that rumor started. That's not at all.
Weinstein apologized.
Just because you have a shitty memory, you can't remember. Now all of a sudden I'm defending pedophiles. How does this happen? How am I an advocate for pedophiles all of a sudden? Because you can't remember two separate sex offenders.
How about this? You want to hear something, fucking Harry? You just mixed them up again.
Probably.
Harry, you're mixing up your dear friends. Come on, bro.
Good friends.
You, what kind of friend are you, Harry?
Misunderstood friends. Harvey Weinstein, Jeffrey Epstein, our mentor, Bill Cosby.
I just call him Webstein.
So Webb, that covers. That covers it.
Covered either way.
Webstein.
So which one were you referring to, Dante? Talking about? Okay, Harvey Weinstein.
Weinstein, like you and I have talked about this several times. Sure. A guy like that who does and says exactly what Will Smith said, which is that I'm going to become rich and famous enough that nobody will ever do that. But what Weinstein and these guys do, I will become rich and famous enough so that I will bend everybody's will, and everybody who doesn't find me attractive, if they don't, I will make them have sex with me, and it's not going to matter what they think or what they don't think. I'm going to make them so. And one of the things that I've had this argument with women a lot of time is that guy is probably not the best boss in general. I understand right. that he likes sex, and he likes women, likes pussy, and just because he doesn't like man ass doesn't mean he's a great guy. So that everybody that works for him is subject to him being a fucking idiot, who a piece of garbage, who has feels offended by the fact that he's not attractive or not whatever, or doesn't get the attention that he wants. And he treats everybody like shit because he has power over them and he controls them. It controls them anyway. And had he been interested in men, Terry Crews would have had a problem. You know what I mean? He would have definitely, because you know, Terry,
all up.
Terry lets it happen, even if it's in his, with his wife watching. So
is that, I've never heard that one. Is that is Terry Crews the cuck shit?
Oh no, he's not. Well,
no, what?
I don't know. Terry Crews. My bad. Terry Crews got grabbed. He basically came out as saying he got Me Too'd by a director or something. Grabbed his balls in front of his wife, and he came out and said he got Me Too'd, and then. D.L. Hughley was like, I get that you want to go along to get along because you want to get these parts. He says, but this is in front of your wife. And so Terry Crews threatened to kick D.L. Hughley's ass. And then D.L. Hughley, being a comic, was like, oh, you want to kick my ass, but you don't want to kick the ball grabber's ass. You're fine with him. He goes, and then DL starts roasting. He goes, isn't the whole point of working out to get muscles so that you don't have that happen? So people don't kick sand in your face, right. And then you get all these muscles, and then you let people, not kick your sand in your face, but grab your nobules or whatever, So he got really tough with DL, and then DL was like, oh, me? Oh, you want to get tough with me? Okay. You know,
that's so funny. You have misplaced target.
Yeah, well, Terrence. Not really, because he, it goes to show you what kind of integrity he has, that he wouldn't stand in for himself, and that when it comes to the money, he'll do whatever he has to do for the money and then not stand up, which is a whole nother thing. But he's also been a kind of a racial apologist as well.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I mean, come on, he's on that bullshit too. So make your own path. And
speaking of Harry, you should pull your pants up. Come on, dude.
This is I thought that was the whole reason we do these things via Zoom.
Yeah. So you don't have to pull your pants up.
What's the point? What's the point?
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I didn't sign up for this. To just not do it my way.
You're doing the Jeffrey Tobin.
Oh, the Tobin? Yeah, the Jeffrey Tobin. That was the most victimless crime. As far as all these, that's how bad things are. You know? So what was he doing? He's just jerking off. Like, that's it. The guy was just jerking off when he thought all right. And then
you really want to upset Louis C.K.
Oh boy.
When you go, oh, all he did was jerk off. Come on. Yeah. Take it easy.
Well, no, that's different. That wasn't in front of anybody. But Brett.
He also, Jeffrey Tobin also didn't ask permission. That's another
thing. He didn't, but he also didn't know it was in front of anybody. Right, that's the difference. Enough. I think Louis was well aware there was someone else in the room.
Well, that's why he asked for permission.
That's true.
Mother raised him right.
That's right.
Goddamn
it's
right.
Called manners, everybody. It's called being a gentleman.
M-A-N-N-E-R-S, manners. Yes. So, manners.
Brett, what was the relation? Why did the last relationship end for you?
Here we go. It was one of those ones where I think two ships passing in the night type of thing, where it was just like, I think we just didn't have that next level connection. And I feel like we both liked each other. We both got along well, and they were a cool person, but it was just kind of like a sense of needing something more, I think, for both of us.
It's not all relationships are meant to be for the long term. You know, it's sometimes people can enjoy each other's company for a bit and, you know, exchange that energy and experience, and it doesn't have to be forever. But that's how you discover the ones that are forever.
Yeah. And that was a woman who, like, I almost would want to see her again just to be like, how you been? Like, in a very friend way, not remotely. There's no part of me that has any, like, feelings.
Well, why
left
wouldn't
over.
You do that? Why wouldn't you make that call? It just feels awkward to do so. Or
maybe a little more time. I don't want to, you know, I'm like somewhat new in this relationship. I don't want her to feel like,
oh, okay,
I'm contacting an ex, and like, you know, I would tell her what I would do to make her comfortable, but I don't want her to think like, if she's not like the jealous type. She's not.
Yeah.
Like,
but I mean, I think if you went all in, just, yo, this was something we just weren't, and I'm just really happy. You could always preface it by, you know, I wanted to make this call because I'm really happy with my situation, and I appreciate the fact that we did separate, because I wouldn't have found you. And then she'll be like, yeah, call her. Yeah, tell her that you don't want her anymore.
Yeah, and that woman probably, it's not like she would be like, oh, fine, waiting by her phone. Finally, a text from Brett. I've needed this for months. It was like she had all of her shit together and everything. And
yeah,
attractive lady.
It's funny. I just kind of broke it off with somebody because we weren't having enough sex. And people go, well, I mean, that's shallow. And I go, no, it's not. Nope. It's what I want. And it's funny because I said, there's one of three things that are happening here. Either number one, you don't want to fuck me, which I get it. I mean, I don't want to fuck me sometimes. And two is you're fucking somebody else, which I get it. If you want somebody else, you can't fight that. I mean, I can't be mad at you because it's an emotion. Or maybe you're just not a sexual person in that way. And all of the above kind of is why we're not going to be together.
You.
It doesn't matter why.
It's not compatible for you.
And so I said, well, you know, I just kind of feel like this. You're this way. And, you know, she was like, it's not that I'm not attracted to you. I just, you know, whatever, whatever the circumstances is. Well, my wife being in England or whatever. And then I was like, well, you know, so she made it clear that she had to let me know that in all of her other relationships, she was always the sexual aggressor. And I was like, I don't know why you would tell me that unless you're trying to fucking turn the screws. But that was one of the three reasons why I said why this doesn't work. I don't know why you had to make it clear which one it was, but okay. I go, it still remains that you don't want to fuck me, and I don't want to spend time with somebody that doesn't want to fuck me. And I think one of the things that it really, what this is, every time I go through a situation with somebody, I realize how important the lesson is, so I don't ever make that lesson again. I don't even make that mistake again. And what I realize is, because I was married before, and one of the reasons why I got divorced in the first place was because the sex just went to shit. And one of the things that I would say to guys anytime, if the sex is not good when you go into the relationship, marriage is not going to make it better.
That's,
it's,
yeah.
it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. Well, seldom do people go, you know, now that we're older and now that we've been together longer, it's
we
like
should we fuck more. We're
fucking more. It's so crazy.
although I have heard situations where women have become older in their 50s and they become in their sexual prime and they want it all the time. And then the guy is. But I mean, if you got to wait that long to fucking get your dick sucked, you, I mean, look,
right. Yeah, you can't hold out for that. Yeah, I like to think my prime is like LeBron. I've been in my prime for my whole career.
Right, right, right.
I've only been in my sexual prime.
Well, for now, anyway, right? You're as best as you can be right now.
The dick does age well. At least, I don't know what age the dick is at its peak. I'm sure it's different for every man, but yeah, that, you know, at least from my personal experience, young, youthful, less experienced dick is never great. I mean, there's never any issues with like hardness or anything like that, but just in terms of experience,
right? You just
dick is still just like, holy shit, vagina.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah.
Like you're not
present. You're rushing through. You're like,
yeah.
Sex drive is in 30s, early 40s.
And a woman's? Starts,
men's.
Hmm. Starts to decline.
Testosterone starts to slowly decrease around age 35. Typically goes down by about 1% per year. It could go down faster in some men.
Yeah, I mean, you could always get some tests. You know, when you get low T, you could always get a couple of shots. Kind of revs the engine, you know, jump starts the engine a little bit. But you're right. I mean, I find that I'm definitely not the person. I mean, I'm more precise. And I think I'm a better lover, but I also feel like if I'm not into it, I'm just not into it. You know, I'm just like, if the person is not into it, I'm not into it. I would rather not than.
That's why I've never enjoyed strip clubs or whatever, to be honest. I never liked
the facade of it.
Yeah, I never enjoyed the thing of like someone pretending that they like me just in general. I mean, I have
totally agree.
Yeah. Like, it's just that the notion of that, or even paying for sex, always I was just like, I don't.
Yeah, paying for sex. But come on, Harry, you've been with me in strip clubs and I'm bagged. But I mean,
you have, but you're actually they legitimately like, look, I dated a stripper at one point.
Right.
Early on. It can happen. But that's the outlier. My point is, I don't like going in there cold. And, you know, I have cash in my hands and then they're like, hey, you want it?
Yeah,
like,
but I mean,
it bothers me.
I understand
they don't like me.
what it's supposed to be. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
But I mean, you've watched me go into a strip club with money in hand and the whole nine.
Right,
and
but I've never seen you get a lap dance at a strip club.
Oh, no, I would never do that.
That's my point, though. You have gone into a strip club and you've talked to. You've talked to dancers or whatever, and you've made a connection,
percentage of the women that I know.
That's different. That's different than going in there and paying for it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean, going in it. Here's my thing, Harry. I mean, going in it, you don't have to go. Nobody's saying you have to go in and get a lap dance. Are you saying you don't like just the whole process of getting a lap dance and the facade of that?
Yes, correct.
Because it doesn't have to be. I mean, you've seen me flip that on its ear in minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
then,
but it's not through pain. I saw you do it. You basically ignore them and then you have a real conversation with them. You've never gone in there.
No,
with waving money in the air going, hey,
oh, no, but I mean,
right,
I wouldn't do that at a fucking regular club.
I understand.
And there's guys that do that at a regular club. So, I mean, the dynamic.
That's
the
stupid
dynamic
too.
Of. Huh? Right. It's
I think that's
too, but I'm saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. But I mean, I think the dynamic of it, I think, I mean, you got your girl. I mean, but if you have enough right now to go into a strip club and pull a very nice young lady out
I'm
of there.
Sure I, and I
and
I
have a nice.
Save her.
Save her.
Sorry.
Save
I don't. Oh, I'm not saving nobody. But I'm kidding, I definitely will go, you know, I'll go in and pull two or three numbers out of there that I'm talking, you know. Followed up on later, but that's also because I don't, you know what I think? I guess you know what I'm thinking, Harry, is when you say that, I think when you think about it like that, it's not just the dynamic of the strip club. It's the fact that you're assuming that these stripper women are different in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like you think they're different than, it's almost like saying they're different than regular women. Kind of weird, regular women, but you know, that strip club,
the average girl.
I understand the context. I mean, if a girl is smoking hot and she's at a place, you know, at a hot club, she's looking for the VIP and the bottles. Yeah.
If she comes up to me and goes, "Hey, can you buy me a drink?" I go, "No."
Yeah.
What have you done to earn a drink?
What do you mean, Brett? What do you mean? You agree with which part?
I agree with like not buying someone a drink. I think it's like in this context of like at a strip club, I'm with you. The one time I went to a strip club, I've been once, and they would come up and they would do the, like, you know, the thing of, oh, and I didn't even dress nice. I dressed in a t-shirt and freaking khaki shorts.
Yeah.
And then I think they probably go, young guy who is dressed poorly, he's actually the rich one. Really what it is I just didn't dress up because I've never been. And everyone else is like, you know, in collared shirts and suit jackets. And I would tell them straight up, I would go, listen, I'll be really honest. I am not going to pay money for a lap dance. If you'd like to talk for 10 minutes to have a nice conversation, I will do that. But I understand you're working and you need to make money. So go talk to other people so you can work and make money.
And what's their response? I mean, that's actually the best game in the world. You could pop one out of there real easy saying,
I had a few conversations and then I would go, all right, go, you know, go do your job. I did get one number of not a stripper. It was the hostess, the woman at the front. I thought she was the prettiest gal there.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how we started talking, but I was able to get her number, text her a few days later. She was like, let's do a date. I was like, great. Then the date rolled around an hour before. She's like, I got this thing came up. And then, you know, and then she was like, oh, we'll reschedule. And then I text her one more time. She didn't respond. And I was like, all right, no reason to.
Well, I mean, that's like any other woman in every. Yeah. My point being is, the environment, if women, you know, I mean, you know, to be honest, if somebody's doing this, they think that this is a financial situation where they can make some good money on it.
Of course.
But they're and they probably don't have other options, or at least they don't have other options that are more lucrative. Because if they did, they wouldn't. I don't know. I've never met a woman who just loves the strip club. You know what I mean? It's kind of what you do because it's what you have to do. It's kind of like bouncing. Like every dude over 250 pounds with a black t-shirt and cargo pants stands in front of somebody's club, somewhere, and makes people feel uncomfortable about their self-worth. But the reality is people do what they want, what they can do based on what their resources are, and to think of women any different than any other. I get the context of let's be honest. If you're in a club and somebody's looking for VIP, they're shallow but we navigate that no matter what the profession is. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think it's really easy to pull strippers because they already feel as though they're in control.
Interesting.
They already know. They feel like they're in control. I know what this is. I know what you want. And then all of a sudden, when you show that, that's not what I want, then they're instantly intrigued because you're so different than everybody else that goes in the club. Everybody else is kind of into the facade of the, you know, the whole play that goes in. Speaking of plays,
this guy is a seasoned vet. I could talk about strip clubs all day.
You're in a play. You wanted to promote this play, Race.
Yes.
It's funny because I just did a Sirius Radio with Dean Edwards, and Dean Edwards was on it. I did not know that Andre was in it. And Andre and Eagle Wick.
It's Race the Play the Movie.
That's a Race the Movie, the Play. Yeah. It's we did a three show run for the New York Theater Festival. Sold out all three shows.
Nice.
We won best script. I somehow won best actor of the festival. I don't know how. I'm not being fake humble. I am not an actor, but I did do a silly voice and I jumped around a lot on stage.
Okay.
Genuinely, Dean was also nominated. Dean right. should have won because Dean is a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Who can deliver on the comedy, but his part,
I heard his part was very straight.
He's the straight man of the show. Like, he's the one that his existence is what makes the story run. And make no mistake, Dean has his comedic moments and scenes. But
he talked about that with me about how it's such a serious part, and being able to kind of, as a comic who's a funny dude, to allow other people to have their moments is a difficult thing to do when you're a headliner and you've been a headliner for so long.
For 30 years. Yeah. Dean's been in the game for 3 decades. So it's but it's like, it's almost like he is the engine of the whole thing. And there is no comedy without him.
There's no setup.
There's no setup. And he has, like, you know, make no mistake, it's not like he doesn't have his laugh lines. And what's really cool is watching a guy like Dean be able to squeeze a laugh out of not a joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can make setup funny
or
just with line delivery and performance. But I'm very inspired by Dean. I mean, you know, it's really cool to watch him work every day at or almost every day at rehearsals. And it's very humbling to have him involved because it's like,
holy shit. You know what's funny?
Yeah.
Dean did Sirius. Whose house are you in? The guy who did his play?
Yeah, it's not my house, but we rehearsed, and he may have recorded where I am.
Yeah, he recorded come to think of it. It's all coming together now. He was, because I remember the staircase in the corner, and I was like, he was like, oh, we were going over lines and stuff. Like, that's interesting. Yeah.
This is the house that he recorded that in, because I remember that day, he was like, can I just record at your place? And I was like, yeah dude. This is the house. I live in this house.
Uh-huh.
I am somewhere in between squatting, but the guy knows I'm here and he doesn't really care.
Okay.
So I got no heat or hot water, but I also don't have any rent. So it's a pretty fortunate living situation for someone pursuing.
You got that award though.
You got the best actor.
I got that 200. That it was, the prize money was $250, guys.
Nice.
Listen, I'm not trying to flat that $250, like plastic trophy that they probably scrubbed out Little League champion and just put tape that said best actor on it.
It was weird that it had a guy doing a judo karate kick in it. Around his kick at the top.
Front, it seemed like front a strange, snap kick on
yeah,
it. On
it did seem like a strange. Thing. Best supporting actor like had that. A bowler on top. It's very odd.
Weird.
Wouldn't have surprised me, but
well, what's the play about?
Well, fantastic question. It's a it's Race the Movie, the play. It's a spoof of all of the recent white savior movies. So and prestige race movies. So basically, picture Scary Movie, but for Green Book, The Help, Hidden Figures, 12 Years a Slave, Django. It's original title, and I have a co-writer on it. I also wrote it. We won best script also. My co-writer is Christian Duran,
I know Christian
buddies
Duran.
With Chris.
Christian Duran.
Is this the play that you were talking about the last time that you were on the show?
It was a movie script.
It's all coming together now.
The reason I launched the cryptocurrency called Breakcoin was I was trying to raise capital to make the movie because I wanted to be able to make the movie without permission from traditional industry gatekeepers, because every traditional industry gatekeeper said, this script is really funny, but like, you know, we can't do it. And it was really frustrating because we know what we're making fun of. We know what we're satirizing. We know audiences will get it. It's like people are smart enough. Like, yeah, we're making a sorry, I cut you off.
Why don't you do the Race, the Movie, the Play, the Kickstarter?
We did launch a Kickstarter. Okay. We successfully funded our play.
Beautiful.
And that Kickstarter is what funded this the run of shows in the New York Theater Festival, and what is springboarding us to Our most recent thing we're promoting, which I don't know when this comes out, but if it's before July 17th, we are doing a table read at the Comedy Cellar. You can get tickets at racethemovietheplay.com.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take you right there. And it's at the Village Underground at the Comedy Cellar. And so I'm really thankful for everything that, you know, you guys let me talk about on your show. And
yeah.
A lot has led to this. And I think it's only going to get bigger from here. I mean, I really think it's a perfect concept with a great script and an even better cast. Mm-hmm. And from our star, which is Dean, by the way, I wanted to say this. They gave me the award, and I want to make this joke. It felt like when Macklemore got Best Grammy over Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, okay.
That's how I felt when they gave it to me.
You didn't. Even Macklemore is from his grave going, you know, you didn't beat Dean.
I got no fake humility about it.
It is fitting that a project that is about white saviors, you do win Best Actor.
Yeah,
you do understand that a white man would win Best Actor and the best.
There's literally someone jokes else in our
from
show.
The play who is nominated a and black the, actor from the play.
Dude, for the record, the show, the script, the story is centrally Dean's character's story. Like,
right.
It's a head fake because my character's name is Wyatt Savior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a head fake because it starts out focusing on me. But after the first three scenes,
I then become
like an ensemble player. The first three scenes, the first 20, 25 minutes, I'm in all of it. But after that, I then am one of the ensemble actors. And it's Dean is the one, his character. So the story is I play a white chauffeur named Wyatt Savior who's tasked with driving around a brilliant black musician named Gene Yuss.
Right.
On his concert tour through the 1850s Deep South. And because it's the 1850s, the
it's
Deep
Green
South.
Book. Go ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like a Green Book parody. And but it's like Dean's character has all of the heavy lifting acting wise.
Right, right.
Like
we he's playing this part straight.
He's playing it straight.
Educated.
Yeah,
Is he also gay or no?
He is in our script. And funny thing. Oh, Dean said the funniest thing in a rehearsal because in the script it does say towards the end, you know, his husband comes in, and it's part of the joke is his husband's name is Oscar, so he goes, "I'm his Oscar," and then they smooch. And that's like the joke. And I remember Dean one rehearsal. We were like, "So you guys," and Dean goes, "Listen, I'm letting a few N-bombs fly. I don't need to kiss a guy." And we're like, fair. That's totally fair.
It's coming together, man.
It's coming together. I mean, the cast, I can tell you every character's name is a joke in it. We have Wyatt Savior, Gene Yuss. We have Ted Alexandro plays a character named Ray Sist. his wife's name is Ovarian. So it's Ray and Ovarian Sist.
Right.
Their daughter's name is Gentrifier. You know, she runs a real estate company out of Brooklyn called Gentrifier Holdings. She's played by Mia Faye.
What does Andre play?
Andre plays a character. His name is Don Freeman. He's the one who hires me to work for Gene. And the payment that my character gets for driving around this brilliant black musician is I will be able to earn what's called an OOTGO badge. OOTGO. It stands for one of the good ones.
Okay.
It's a distinction white allies can earn from the black community.
Wow.
Nice.
And yeah,
Eagle. So, who does Eagle play?
Eagle plays a character named Stretch, who is a slave on the plantation. Who we are introduced to him because he's on the plantation, and he's going like, yo, check out my sheet music. Yo, check out my sheet music. Like,
that's funny.
He's yeah, yeah. He's like, yo, I got the hottest spirituals in the game, bro. Yeah. I got them slave bars.
That's dope.
But Eagle, everyone, like, you know how with comics, like, it's different with comics. It's not actors. Mm-hmm. It's comics. And what has been awesome about comics is we do know funny, and
yeah,
we have a great funny script, but you better believe when you get 5-10 funny, actually funny comics in a room, you better believe some punch ups are just
some regular shit is going to get pumped up. Everything is going to get bumped up.
And what's great at being a comic who's making this, and Christian was the director. Mm-hmm. We never had any ego about the script or our jokes. It's like,
I just want
the funniest joke. I don't give a fuck if it's my mouth or if it's something Dean said or Eagle or Dre or just whoever. So it's like, and what's great with comics is I don't think any of us has that insecurity about, like, you know, like,
well, you got a bunch of funny dudes.
We all know we're funny.
The insecurity comes when somebody's not funny and they don't want to be outshined, or, you know. Well,
there's people who are, it's show business, man. There's really talented people who are still self-loathing and it's never enough. It can be a double-edged sword. It could be dangerous. There's people who get up and kill, but it can still be tricky, especially when it comes to acting and you have to allow other people to have their moment. There is that bit of ego that could happen.
I've done some acting with comics, and then I've done it where it was really difficult because somebody just kept trying to steal the line. I've never had that with people who have, like, established comics. I've never any established comics, because all established comics at some point in time they do some acting, and in the context of some acting, they need to stay in their lane to a certain extent, because if not, then none of it is funny. It's just, you know, you're just talking over each other, and you know, in the essence of what it is. But I mean, I think what I think also is great that this is becoming a big thing where it wasn't a big thing in the first place. Do you understand what I mean?
It's getting bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, where it was like, I got this script, you guys want to do it, I think you would be great for it. And then comics are going, yo, this sounds like fun. This is something different, something fun. It's funny because I was talking to Andre, and the truth of them, what I love about the business, and I don't know if Harry would agree with this or not, as I love about the business, that I feel like the business is becoming more true to more truthful. And look at Harry's face, the smirk on his face. Let me make my point.
Yeah. I'm always your point, so I can disagree.
All right, let me.
I'm waiting for my chance to talk.
Can you hear me out first before you disagree?
Oh, so come on.
Here's the interesting thing. Uh-huh. I do understand that there are still people who are getting the green light who should not be getting the green light, because gatekeepers are saying, there's gatekeepers who are present in certain genres of comedy where they're deciding what's funny. And usually the people who are non-creative are always the people who are making the decisions about what's valid. In the context of social media and stuff, what's happening now, there's no more business to business and business to customer, meaning Comedy Central needs to discover me to put me on a half hour special so that people can see me. Now, it doesn't matter. You can do Comedy Central. You can do Fallon. I always talk about this all the time. A good friend of mine, Pete Lee has 6 Jimmy Fallons, and nobody gives a fuck, because it's more important that you get on Joe Rogan than it is you get on Jimmy Fallon. More eyes on you and Joe Rogan than it. And so I think, and I'm not saying this, Harry, that I don't think it's all the way fair, but I think it's gonna, because of the fact that when you are selling your product or you're exposing your product to the people get to decide that we like this or we don't like this. And because it's no more business to business, and then the gatekeepers, people who have never been on stage and not creative at all. Sure, there's still that stuff. I mean, I still have situations where I have people who are supposed to be friends of mine who don't book me in their club, and I don't get no. But it's mattering less and less, because I'm literally taping every comedy set that I do simply because I'm trying to feed the beast. The beast is content. The people want content. Mm-hmm. I don't believe, and you tell me what you think about this, I don't believe we're going to have Denzel Washingtons and Tom Cruises and mega stars anymore, because there were so many streaming platforms that, whereas I knew, we all knew comics who got something or got on a show, we knew exactly what show they got on, mm-hmm. and what they were doing, and then they were blowing up and they were moving up the ladder. I was watching Sam J's Pause on HBO, which I've, you know, she got that. I've never really watched one episode covered it, just because I don't, it's not in my realm. And I don't know if you know Leonard Oots, but Leonard Oots was talking about, yeah, you know, when I got famous, and I'm in my mind, I'm like, when were you famous? You know, so apparently he had a sitcom on Channel 4 that I've never seen, never saw an advertisement for it. I may have saw a poster for it, and then when it gets canceled or whatever, nobody cares. It's literally like you build your fan base, and then they fuck with you, and they fuck with you. The funny thing is, like, I was talking about Andrew Schultz, Netflix wanted to edit his special.
Do we know it was Netflix? I didn't know it was Netflix.
Yeah, He said it was Netflix, and he decided he wouldn't edit it. He said, because people want to hear this. And then he marketed it himself and got downloads, and he did over 1 million downloads at $15 a piece. And so they were wrong about it, you know. Here's a funny thing is I tell you about this conversation I had with Chris DiStefano, Harry.
Which conversation?
So he did his special. Netflix wouldn't pick it up. Nobody would pick it up. Comedy Central wouldn't. Nobody would pick it up. He decided to film it himself. And then at the end of his special, he goes, you know, fuck Netflix, fuck this. I appreciate you guys coming out and supporting me. I love you guys. Thanks for fuck Netflix, blah, 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 blah. Then later on, as he picks up heat, Netflix decides to buy the special. So they offer him the money for the special, but now they want to edit out the part where he goes, fuck Netflix, right? And Chris goes, you know what? I appreciate it. I'm not being a dick, but I'm not going to let you edit my project. Right. You didn't pay for it. You didn't want it. This is what it was. Those were my feelings at the time when I shot it. And if you're going to edit it, then I'll just give it back to me. Let's squash the deal. And I'll just market it to my people, straight downloads. And they were like, all right, I guess we'll take it right now. As artists, we go, wow, it's really cool that Netflix, you know, left that in. Like, how cool is Netflix that they understand the artists and the creatives, and they didn't make him take it out? But that's not, it was Chris that stood up and said, I'm not going to let you do that.
Right.
And then they put it in. So when you watch the end of his special, he goes, fuck Netflix, blah, 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 which is actually kind of cool in a way. There's a cool factor to Netflix because he did say that, you know? And so I think what's happening is now, because it's direct from you, the creative, directly to the customer, these gatekeepers don't get to decide. And because they don't get to decide, there's a truth to that.
Yeah.
How good do you think you are? And if you put your projects out there, people who it resonates with are gonna like it. It's gonna take a little longer. You don't have the distribution, you don't have the exposure to people. But even with this, it's like you're slowly chugging along along this thing. And I think this, I really think this is going to be a big thing.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all, actually. I think it's
a better
situation. Yeah, I think it's a better situation than it's ever been, because you have access to just the tools to create, you know, even on TikTok, just is, you know, just they give you the tools to even to do primitive stuff on TikTok.
Right.
You have the platform of doing your own shows. You have a platform of distributing your stuff. So, I mean, it just what Brett's doing is amazing. Just having that platform now. So now, you know, now he can get on our show, a show that is an independent show.
Right.
And, you know, reach a couple, you know, thousand people as far as talking about this project that he's doing that, you know,
tens of thousands of people.
Tens of thousands of people. Well, I'm just, you know, tens of thousands. You're right. And so, like, that's really amazing. You know, you can be your own, in your own control. There's always going to be corporate things, I think, that, you know, I think people always take control over stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's, I don't know that it will ever be the same. It's very independent. It's the best time to be an independent artist, because there will always be a new platform that pops up.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think YouTube will be bought up by somebody or whatever, you know, but.
Right.
And then we'll move on to something else.
The next one, TikTok or whatever,
we'll move on to
whatever the next one's going
to
be.
You know, we'll move on to another platform and stuff. But what's great about it is that great creative people and great creative things allow themselves to, if you're on the cutting edge and you're doing it, you meet, and then once you build your fan base, you can tell everybody to suck your dick, like because you can do it yourself. What's interesting
is
that somebody
becoming Harvey Weinstein, though.
Right. Well, the
everyone.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well, I didn't mean it like that.
Then
I mean,
you can develop
a
TikTok
asking.
Following and bend people's will, and that's really the point of all.
Yeah. Well, you can get a great following and bend their will to suck your dick. but what's interesting is I really feel like this is a, you know, just the whole idea of it is like you could just see it as a creative. I could see that this is a really good project. It's something, it's different. It's, they're probably very nervous about it because it's a touchy subject, but people want this kind of, people want it, you know?
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, I don't think good comedy or art comes from like a place of fear of how you're perceived. I think it comes from knowing and being thoughtful about what you're saying, and forth, you know. And so it was just frustrating. But the why we did it as a play is because in our case, it was like, well, then we can do it and we can do it in front of a live audience and it will kill. And if it kills, you can't deny the kill. You can talk about subjectivity of comedy, but you can never deny.
You
a
can
kill
say,
in a row.
Was it a good play? Yes or no?
Did it kill?
And so vote up or vote down. And is it sensitive? Are these sensitive situations? Did they? But also, what you're also talking about is you're dealing with these issues, which are which you got to be honest about. Like, we need to have an honest conversation. And I think what's happening now at this point, I mean, you see somebody comes out and they shoot up people at 4th of July, and then you get people that go, well, it's because of video games, and the guy had tattoos on his face, and, you know, it's, and there's nothing. So, but I think we're also getting to the point where, and I've said this to Harry, and I think Harry, you're going to have to give me my props sooner or later. The cancel culture is just about over. There's guys who went on the chopping block, and I've said this, that the pendulum is swinging back. Like, it always, there's always an overcorrection for the undercorrection in the first place.
Well, that's going to have a lot to do with the more independent things become, to be honest, because a guy like Andrew Schultz is, for lack of a better term, uncancelable.
Right.
You know,
he's uncancelable and he doesn't need you.
He would have been canceled
or
censored.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of individuals harping on cancel culture, like, sometimes I can feel like, you know, frustrated by some comics harping on it, because I just can go, oh, it's a marketing thing for you to do. And I don't need to extend that to anyone specifically. Well, maybe Joe Rogan, but I feel like it's like a marketing thing to say he's got to be afraid of cancel culture. I mean, you know.
Well, he clearly doesn't because.
No. Yeah, exactly.
He's, you know, we got to the situation deal. With N-bombs on. And I didn't think he should be canceled. I mean, I think that Joe Rogan has evolved in a lot of ways since he first started doing the show till now. And I mean, you're always going to have these imperfect allies. But I think
said as much, too. He did say
that. Yeah, he said himself that. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think what's interesting is you approaching this, you know, white savior as, you know, as what's the name of your character again?
Wyatt Savior.
You're going, this is ridiculous. And I'm pointing this out. So the intention is not, it's not a disrespectful intention. It's the exposition. It's the exposed, the hypocrisy of it. And the fact that people are talking it's interesting because I had, you know, I mean, this is a relationship show and but I always want to give a gem here and there. And so I initially had a consultation with a dude. We got time for this or you want to do this afterwards?
Let's do it at the Patreon because we're out of time.
Okay, so let's do it in the Patreon. But plug the thing, man. I'd love you to plug it in. I'm real happy for you, bro. What you got going on?
Absolutely. And so, yeah, as I mentioned, we're doing a live table read at the Comedy Cellar. Mm-hmm. July 17th, the Village Underground Room. If people want tickets, they go to the Comedy Cellar website or racethemovietheplay.com. Okay. It is a great show that one reviewer called Mel Brooks for the modern era. So if you miss that slapstick...
That's an awesome compliment, bro.
It's a very big compliment. And, you know, I like to think that we set out to write Blazing Saddles in 2022.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch Blazing Saddles when we get off.
It's a class. Come to the show. We'll comp your tickets.
Yeah,
both of y'all.
You're
free. No
pressure. Let's do that. I want to.
When
come.
Is it?
I would love to come. Again?
July 17th, this upcoming Sunday at we got a 6 p.m. show. In their big room, and I would happily comp both you guys because you've.
What time is it? What time is it?
It's a 6 p.m.er, so it's.
All right, I might be able to make that.
I'll email you guys both, but.
I'm in.
I'm telling you.
I know I'm supposed to do a live radio show, serious radio with Karen Hunter's radio show. We're doing at Caroline's, but I'm not sure. I think it's 2:00, so I might still be able to make it. I'd love to make it, and if not, I'd love to come see it when y'all do it again. If I can't do that, but that man, thanks, Brett. This was dope.
My thanks go to you guys because, as you mentioned, like you guys have an independent platform and you've built a fan base and a community of people. So
yeah,
you know, reaching. Going around the gatekeepers is what's
happening. Well, I mean, that wasn't our intention. We just nobody wanted to fuck with us.
But fuck them for not fucking with you.
And now great guys like Jeff Singer can no longer use Montreal Comedy Fest as his dating app.
Yeah.
Fuck him. Piece of shit. Anyway. Harry, talk to
me. It's good to close out on a positive note here on the School 202.
I don't take time out to shit on people.
It's never been said, Dante. That is never been said.
Nobody
no has ever said that.
Nobody said Dante doesn't shit on me. All right.
I get off mic and he goes, "That guy fucking sucks."
Nah, I would tell you that now.
My stuff is just at YouTube. Speaking of independent, follow my stuff because I'm going to be doing some more things here. So please follow me on YouTube. I have stand-up clips, short films. Follow my social media. A lot of the independent stuff I do is on there. And I'm going to be, tweeting it out, you know, Instagramming, TikTok, all of them, at Harry Turjanian.
All my shit, you know, the Instagram, it's up. Consultations is up. My YouTube page, I'm putting up stuff, putting up stand-up and clips and stuff like that. GYBB, get your balls back. Oh, don't forget to follow the Patreon. Patreon is www.patreon.com/manschool202. Please follow this Patreon.
Yeah, and we're going to do some bonus
creating
content.
And stuff like that.
Bonus content with Ray. I keep saying Ray.
GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted. I love y'all, man. Thank you. Thanks for listening.